Have you ever had a feeling that something dreadful was about to happen?
This whole premise is sweaty.
Okay, moving right along.
You gonna plagiarize the whole thing for us? Do you have any thoughts of your own on this matter?
Just remember that this thing isn't as black as it appears.
Hold on to your butt.
The only difference between me and a homeless man is his job.
I'm glad you're here to tell us.
I'm looking for the least possible amount of responsibility.
And that ain't bad.
I'm in a glass case of emotion.
Man's got to know his limitations.
I'm glad you came back.
In the bag.
Network. I drink it up.
Welcome to the Bag Pod, everyone. Coming off a nice MLK observance weekend. So that's why we're coming at you a couple days late. But, you know, I can't make my writers and my contributors work too hard.
And I respect that. I respect that. You know what I'm saying? Taking holidays, paid vacations, and all of that. I can appreciate the in-the-bag workers' rights package. I like what you do. I like what you do, Bagman.
Thank you. Let's just head right into it here.
Let's do it, man. I mean, I have to say, I didn't look too good in this playoff weekend, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, let's just start with the Niners game here. I guess everyone was thinking it was a surprise, but people weren't really thinking it was going to be a surprise because that's kind of like how the 49ers have been all year. Everyone's kind of counted them out, but they just keep on winning, so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I gave them a chance, and obviously, you know, I was saying I thought Saints would end up scoring too many points, but I guess, you know, the Niners kind of rose to the challenge there at the end and just started scoring and looking like a lot of these other offensive teams that are out there. I mean, you know, I love how everyone's playing up this Vernon Davis thing as the catch three, you know, after T.O. and Jerry Rice.
Oh, man. Vernon Davis. Yeah, Vernon Davis is just a beast. I mean, you can't. He's just an excited young man. He's an excited young man. He's never been to the playoffs before. You can't hate on that.
And I like that, but I have to say, and you know, I do understand that Singletary didn't get it done, and Harbaugh came in and got it done with his guys. But Vernon Davis did turn his career down after the infamous being kicked off the sidelines. Like, that was it. And I want Mike Singletary, you know, to get at least a little bit of credit here. I feel like he's been dismissed as if he did nothing. He was kind of a buffoon-like character. But Vernon Davis, I think, owes his career to that incident.
Fair enough. It was a crazy game. Unfortunately, for some odd reason, I passed out during most of the second half.
That'll happen.
I'm basically like a 75-year-old man, apparently.
Well, you know, I guess that means you've just been working hard. That's what I'd like to think.
Well, that's what we'll go with. Alex Smith kind of proving himself there with the basically the two game-winning touchdown drives there at the end. What do we think about that? Do we think he's finally arrived? Do we think he's the quarterback of the present and the future for the 49ers? Or do we just think that, you know, Alex Smith is there and, this, you know, he's not going to improve, but this is about as great as he could ever be?
I think he's hot right now. I don't like him as a franchise quarterback. I think they should try to get someone else. I mean, you know, all sorts of guys can heat up. All sorts of guys that aren't that good, especially on teams with really good defenses, can look better than they really are. And I just feel like he didn't show us enough consistently throughout the season. Well, you know, listen, it's working the way it is now. If they can win a Super Bowl that way, I guess you give it a chance another year, but if I'm them, you know, you don't really have a high draft pick this year, so I guess you're not going to reach for anyone, but, you know, maybe take a guy in a late round, a developmental guy, I don't know.
Well, they already, they did draft last year with their second round pick, Colin Kaepernick,
Yeah, I don't really count that, though. I mean, come on. I mean, yeah, he was good at Nevada, but I mean, come on.
Alex Smith might be having a bit of a Trent Dilfer-ish kind of career here, you know, kind of highly touted. First round quarterback draft pick who never really lived up to the potential, perhaps. But you know, he ended up playing a game where he was able to be effective, even though not, you know, clearly not great or anything. But maybe his career is going to take a Trent Dilfer-esque turn.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you're playing from a position of strength, it's easier for a middle of the road quarterback to look really good. So I mean, I guess he just has to hope that the defense and the running game really just stay on track. But, I mean, let's see if he has to – I mean, yeah, okay, at the end he got into a little shootout there. But if the whole game had been, you know, a big-time shootout, who do you think would have won?
Yeah, I mean, the 49ers really just – I mean, they came out guns a-blazing there, went up 17-0 on them. So, You know, it was kind of like the Saints. You know, I mean, it wasn't. I mean, it did end up being a back and forth game by the end. But you know, the Saints got up to a big lead, and they got up to that lead, or the Niners got up to a big lead rather, and they got up to that lead mainly because the Saints miscues and stuff. So it wasn't like Alex Smith was leading them down the field.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
All right. In any case, moving on to Pats Broncos. I mean, that's basically kind of what we expected, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I thought the Patriots would win. I didn't really think it was going to be like a hiding, but they just, yeah, I mean, they really embarrassed the Broncos, in my view.
I mean, they played them, what, 5-6 weeks ago, and they embarrassed them then, too, so I didn't see much changing, really. It's not like Tebow all of a sudden got, like, he didn't all of a sudden get great at throwing the ball, you know, within the past 5 weeks, so.
That's true, although, you know, now at least he can know he's secure going into next season as starting quarterback, as John Elway said today. But, yeah, I mean, I think obviously, you know, that model is limited. And I think John Elway saying that maybe just is a kowtow to the fans there, something to make a play for, you know, season tickets next year, because I don't really think that they can really want this guy as the long-term guy.
Well, I think what's going on here is, basically, Elway is saying we're not going to be spending a high draft pick on a quarterback, but I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they brought in a veteran journeyman type guy to be the backup, if you will. But
yeah, someone who can compete.
Yeah, someone that could actually compete and end up being the starter by the end of the season. I've got to say that, you know, I watched a good portion of the first half, and then, you know, after about, I think the Pats scored first, didn't they, in the second half? And once that happened, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to watch something else.
So, yeah, no, I mean, it was so clearly over. It was like, you know, what's the point of watching this game, I guess? I mean, there's some people who maybe get some perverse pleasure out of watching a terrible beating. But I have to say, you know, when it's a clear blowout, it's just, you know.
Do we think the Pats defense has turned a corner? Do you think we're going to see sort of a New Orleans Saints / Indianapolis Colts sort of thing where the defense basically was awful the entire regular season but then started playing in the playoffs? Or do we just think that the Broncos offense just made them look really good?
Yeah, I think the Broncos offense wasn't up to it. I mean, you know, we'll see. I mean, I can believe it, obviously, Bill Belichick, defensive coach. So, I mean, you know, and we're always highly touting his intelligence as a coach. So, obviously, I think, you know, it's possible.
Yeah,
but the defense is turning around. But, yeah, I really think it's the Broncos. But, hey, we'll see.
Fair enough. All right, going to the Sunday slate of games here, the first game, Ravens-Texans. Not a very interesting game.
Yeah.
I guess defensive.
And I found it on the shoals of T.J. Yates. I really put a lot of stock into him. I was riding my ACC guy.
Well, I mean, he only lost by 7 to apparently the vaunted Ravens, in general.
Yeah, I don't even really know. Did you see Harbaugh's speech after the game?
No, I did not. What do you have to say?
It just wasn't really that good.
Oh, yeah, he was saying something about how it doesn't matter how they win, it's just all about getting W's this time of year or some nonsense.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't like it.
But yeah, no, I mean, the Texans actually looked better, basically, except for the quarterback play. They weren't really taking any shots downfield, any chances.
I mean, they're definitely going to be dangerous in the years to come, for sure, and they probably could have won that game. But, you know, it is what it is. I guess I'm not totally surprised that they lost, even though I did have the Texans winning. But I think the Ravens, I've just felt the Ravens were overrated all season for some reason. But and I guess they're not because they're this deep. But
no,
it's just hard for me to really feel like they're going to win.
They didn't play like anyone good. They played the Steelers twice, and they played the Bengals twice. But I wouldn't call the Bengals good, and the Steelers were so-so.
Yeah.
I mean, other than that, I mean, the Ravens were losing to like the Seahawks and stuff. They're just wildly inconsistent.
For sure. And I can't say I believe in Joe Flacco.
I mean, I don't think anyone can. I don't even think Mel Kiper can at this point.
And I feel like Terrell Suggs has really escalated the bravado in the media to a high level recently. And I think that that's like, you know, a clear sign that they're feeling. It's a clear sign of weakness to me.
Mm-hmm, yeah, I mean, he's been talking all season. But, yeah, he has gotten a little bit louder here recently. And, I mean, you know, the Ravens have always been a bit of a talking team. But
That's true. Especially T. Sizzle, who I think had one of the greatest quotes of all time when they hurt Reggie Bush that time. They messed up his ankle, uh-huh. and he said on the radio, "We put a little hot sauce on that ankle."
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. In any case,
I also believe he admitted that they had that bounty, too, right, on Hines
yes.
Ward.
Yeah, I think that was him as well, the bounty.
Clearly illegal.
Oh, Terrell Suggs. In any case, do you think this would have been a blowout had Schaub been starting?
I don't know if it would have been a blowout. I mean, I guess for me it's hard. I just still almost don't even see Schaub as a good quarterback. I mean, I know he is, and he plays well, and the Texans are good. But I just feel like, where was this when he played at UVA? Like, what? I mean, I never perceived him as being that good when he played in college. So it's hard for me to say that it would be a blowout. But I think they probably would have had a better chance.
Yeah. All right. Last game of the week, I guess the biggest game of the week, another kind of surprise, kind of not. I mean, I thought the Packers would come and play, but the Giants ended up beating them and beating them fairly solidly. What do you think about this game?
Well, I mean, the Giants seem to have – I don't know what it is. I mean, it was 2007, the same thing too. You know, they seem to just, in the playoffs some of these years – turn it on. I mean, it was like all year, sometimes they were great, sometimes they were atrocious and getting destroyed by the Redskins. And, hey, listen, believe me, it's killing me that they're even doing this well. I'm a huge Skins fan, as everyone knows. But the point being, I think they're the best team right now. I mean, to me, the Giants are the favorite to win the Super Bowl. And, you know, one stat I thought was interesting is they're leading in the postseason in third down conversions. Mm-hmm. So it's not just the defense. Everyone's talking about the defense, but they're making the big plays on offense, too. You know, Eli all year long in the fourth quarter. So I think the Giants, to me, are that's the team to be.
Well, I mean, I was watching the game, and it was – I mean, the Packers really shot themselves in the foot. There were a bunch of drop passes. That Greg Jennings touchdown pass that hit him right in the hand.
Yeah, ton of drop passes, and then the Rodgers that errant pass. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
right towards, and I can't remember
Finley
who it
Rodgers
yeah, was.
Yeah, Finley. Yeah, no, there was that miscue, and I mean, it just seemed like I didn't even think the Giants' defense was all that good. They weren't getting that much of a rush. It was just really weird. Like, it goes back to your third down conversion stat. Like, when I was watching, the only time that the defense, like the pass rush ever really did anything was basically on a big third down or on that big fourth down, fourth and five, they got that sack. I feel like they only had like three sacks the entire game.
Right.
I feel like they all came on like third and mediums to force a punt or that fourth and five. So it was just really weird because there were a lot of times where Rodgers had just a ton of time to throw, but they were just covering it, and I don't know. I guess he just couldn't make the throws or something. It was just weird to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that maybe they were in his head a little bit. I mean, the home field advantage, I don't know why he would be feeling rattled, but that seems to be the only real thing I could think of, is that just the thought of the defense, of that pass rush, just the thought of it was in his head.
And to me, I wouldn't really call the Giants good offensively either. It was more the Packers blowing it on defense, at least to me. I mean, many of those plays were not great. You know, you weren't in awe of Eli Manning just, you know.
True,
Eli
but
Manning
they're getting it done, though.
Hard.
But they're
yeah,
getting
no,
it done,
I'm not
though.
Saying
you know,
not.
And that's what I'm saying, is they're playing in a way that's very consistent, very efficient, and the times they need plays, they're getting plays. I mean, that's what a leading a third down conversion is about. It's not about, you know, leading the leaderboard. It's about when you need a play, you're getting a play, you know?
Yeah, it's just kind of crazy. I don't know. I mean, I really didn't want to see the Giants win, so I'm kind of upset. I'll get to this in a second. But, yeah, so the Giants ended up putting some pepper on the Packers this past weekend. And so now we've got
stick a fork in them.
Now we got some 49ers Giants, little matchup of the early 90s, late 80s champions.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Defense, two defenses, highly touted defenses.
Mm-hmm. Who do we think is going to win this game? What are we thinking here?
I mean, you know, I've been going back and forth on this, and really, I think I have to say the Giants. I don't want to say the Giants, but I like that pass rush against Alex Smith.
How do you like the? I mean, what do we know? What Chris Canty's all about? Do we know if he's still hurt? If he's going to be able to play?
I don't think we know if he's going to be able to play. I think that that's still up in the air. I mean, I think that obviously that would be a huge loss for them.
I mean, he's the only anchor point on that line, really. He's the only big space-eating type guy while the rest are or at least he's the only good space-eating type guy while the rest, you know, with OC and Pierre Paul and all those guys, they're more speed rushers, that kind of thing. So I feel if Canty's out, it's gonna be a much bigger loss than a lot of people are thinking it might be.
Yeah, no, I mean that is true, but I just think going back to saying earlier, I didn't really believe in the quarterback play in San Francisco leads me to believe I think that they will be able to rattle him. You know, three guys who are very good, who can disguise different types of move, come at you a lot of different ways, bring a lot of different blitzes. I mean, I think that's what you got to do. Listen, they're going to have a good run game. I don't know if they can really stop the run. I don't know if that's what they should be trying to do. Make them eat up clock, you know what I mean? Try to beat them by being able to score more than they can. I think that's what you got to do.
I mean, the 49ers defense, I don't trust Eli Manning halfing. I don't see the Giants being able to run on the 49ers D, and I don't trust Eli Manning, like, having him have to throw the ball all the time. Like, the reason why he was so good and had so many yards against the Packers was because they were effective running the ball. But if you're just making Eli beat you, I don't know. It's just Eli. It's just Eli. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm just checking you out here. Giants had 4 sacks on the game, so I agree with you here. But I have to say, you know, even though Eli, you know, it's hard to, you know, he's Eli. It seems like sometimes he's just amazing. He looks good, and other times he's completely pedestrian. But I have to say, this year I feel like he's had a good season in clutch moments, and this is a big game, and I'm gonna trust him.
All right, that's your self punishment there, my friend.
Yeah, I know. Well, I have obviously proven that I'm not afraid to go out on a limb and be terribly wrong.
In the other game, we've got Ravens, Patriots.
I'm going Patriots here without a doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate the Ravens, so I'm kind of biased towards that, but nevertheless, I just don't see them being – I don't really see this as a question. Obviously, on ESPN, they'll make up a bunch of reasons why the Ravens maybe somehow will win, but I just don't see it happening.
I mean, the Ravens – if the Ravens somehow were to win, there's no way they'd be able to win the Super Bowl.
I mean, what Ravens linebacker is going to match up on Hernandez or Gronkowski?
None of them.
I mean, exactly.
I mean, Ray Lewis. I mean, it's not even like Ray Lewis in his prime was like good at coverage or anything, you know. So
yeah,
it's not like he could have even done that when he was in his prime.
Exactly.
No one can match up on these two. But I'm just thinking like the Ravens will need to have to like turn back the clock like 5 years and have like a ridiculous game to even hope on defense. To even hope to maintain to with the Packers, the Patriots.
Oh, for sure. I mean, they're going to have to find some way to slow Tom Brady down significantly.
I just don't see it happening. Plus, the anemic, the Ravens are so bad offensively. Like, you feel like they should be good, but...
You feel like they should be good, but I think the reason why you feel like they should be good is because Flacco and Matt Ryan, they both came in, they had those two good rookie years, and we said these are the next great young quarterbacks, and Flacco, I think, still has that hangover. You know, they got Anquan Boldin in there, so you were feeling like, oh, man, good young quarterback, top receiver, but it just never panned out because Flacco has plateaued.
Do you think that maybe part of the Ravens' problem is just that they rely so heavily on Ray Rice?
I mean, I do think that's the problem, but the reality of that is if Ray Rice is able to get a significant amount of yards, they should be able to throw the ball because defenses really have to respect the run.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though, too, is because even when they throw the ball, it's Ray Rice.
Yeah, Ray Rice, I mean, that's a good point. That's a good point. He is good. Well, but at the same time, you know, look at who they have at wide receiver, I guess. But they do have Anquan Boldin. I think that they've got to throw the ball more to wide receivers. There's no doubt about that. But at the same time, I think their defense is also aging out. So yeah. I think they got more problems than just what they got on offense right now, you know.
I mean, this is really the last great gasp here for the Ravens. Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, they're clearly on the downside of their career. I'm surprised Terrell Suggs was still able to be so effective this year. I mean, he's getting up there, so it's... I don't know. I just don't see them
in the future for sure.
Yeah. In any case, this is what I was going to say. The Super Bowl matchups. How do you feel about these matchups? You could have the potential of a 49ers Patriots,
yeah,
which is basically 2000s versus 80s, you know, dynasty key
sure.
there.
Sure.
You've got the rookie coach against the master guru sort of thing in John Harbaugh.
That's true.
Belichick. Then you've got, of course, Patriots Giants, which is a rematch of 2007. Do you like that? How do you feel about that rematch?
I would not really like to see that rematch because I more or less hate both teams. Okay. But the reality of it is I kind of am assuming that is what it's going to be.
I mean, I feel like there's been enough time this past where it's like people are thinking that everyone – I mean, I guess Patriots fans want – according to some Patriots fans, they want a rematch for revenge or whatever. But I mean, it was 5 years ago, you know? So I feel as though nationally it'll be like, yeah, okay, well, these teams met 5 years ago and now they're meeting again. But it doesn't really feel like a true rematch. Even though
a lot
of the same
teams are also it's a lot of the same players, but it's also not a lot of the same players in a way. I mean, if you look at that Patriots defense, we're talking about they're not that good. I mean, look who they're missing from that.
Exactly. No, I mean they're missing basically everyone from that.
Right. So yeah. So it's definitely not a rematch in that sense. But you know, and a different type of Patriots team. I mean, relying much more heavily on offense, even though that offense was prolific, they were playing pretty well on defense too.
Yeah. In any case. Perhaps even a less desired rematch would be Ravens-Giants, the forgotten Super Bowl of the new millennium, I would have to
say. I think that actually might not really get high ratings. I mean, the Giants, obviously, in New York bring high ratings, but I feel like the Ravens are, like, not an opponent that the rest of the country cares that much about.
Well, that's by far the game I least want to see. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if that were to happen, because do you think the media would really hype up the Giants-Ravens playing 11 years ago in a pretty bad Super Bowl?
I think they would probably find a way to do it because there's so much coverage in the Super Bowl, just wall-to-wall coverage. You got to pretty much mine every little element of history and statistics and
I know they will, but do you think anyone's going to care is basically what I'm saying.
No, I think that the interest would be definitely way down on the whole Super Bowl week stuff.
Yeah, and then you've got a rematch of the Thanksgiving night game on NFL Network between the Ravens and the 49ers as the other possible matchup in the Super Bowl.
The Harbaugh.
Yeah, the Harbaugh Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, in a way I kind of would like to see that. I mean, two brothers in the Super Bowl, that's pretty historic.
I mean, it would be nice, I guess, but I just feel like it'd get really annoying after day three of coverage.
Maybe. Although, in a way, the Niners being in the Super Bowl to me is a good sign in terms of just new teams. I don't know, I feel like the league's kind of turning over a leaf, and maybe that just gives me some hope. Mm-hmm. You know, for the future in terms of me loving a bad team. So I kind of, in a way, would kind of like to see the Niners. There's a part of me that would like to see them in there.
I mean, I think the 49ers do offer up the best storylines where they've been losing for so much. They've got this rookie coach, now all of a sudden they're winning, a couple guys making good, and Alex Smith, that kind of thing. Finally,
yeah,
they're getting some national recognition for their defense. So I do think the Niners would end up being the best story, but I don't know, 49ers-Ravens rematch of the regular season game. Just
not so much.
Doesn't really excite. Basically, the Ravens, I don't want the Ravens at the Super Bowl either. So.
Yeah, agreed.
In any case, those are your possible Super Bowl matchups. We'll see what happens this coming weekend. But for the other 28 teams in the NFL, some of which the next season has started a couple weeks ago, some of which just this past season. We've got the NFL offseason to look forward to. It's become quite a tradition for lots of stinky teams, such as my Buffalo Bills, whereas I feel as though most fans, many fans at least, almost look more forward to January 1 through, you know, draft night, the final draft night, than they do with the actual season.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. What are you thinking here about the draft, about all the coverage that's about to be, you know, the combine, all that kind of stuff? How do you feel about all this?
I mean, I say let the games begin. I mean, I think this is a good draft this year. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think at a lot of positions there's depth in this draft, and I think there are teams clearly that need a lot of players.
Yes.
And so it's going to be interesting to see, because I think there's going to be competition. And is Peyton Manning going to be traded? I mean, that's the big question. Obviously, some people are reporting that Peyton Manning, Jeff Saturday, could go to the Redskins. It's being talked up by a lot of people that he could go to the Jets. So clearly, you know, there's some things out there. I mean, I think that if you're the Colts, I mean, you know, you fired Jim Caldwell. You fired Jim Irsay. I mean, rather, you fired
Napoleon.
Bill, yeah, Napoleon, the Napoleon, the son and the father, who were the GM and whatever the son was. So it just kind of seems like you're getting rid of the whole regime. It almost seems like you're definitely saying we're building up from scratch. So why not trade Peyton Manning for a significant other pick in the first round? So then, not only do you get Andrew Luck, but say you can get, you know, a top level first and second round player.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we get into that, all that, I'd like to promote an in the bag feature here. We're going to starting with tomorrow. Every Wednesday, we're going to do some NFL draft previews for each team in the league.
No doubt about that. I believe we'll be alternating weeks. Is that how it's going to work?
We haven't decided yet. We could either pick one team. We're going to be doing two teams a week, as there are exactly 16 weeks before the draft, or 16 Wednesdays before the draft. So we could either do one team per week, or we could just do alternating weeks and then do two teams for the week that we have. But yeah,
we'll take that to the production meeting.
Exactly.
But people will be able to get that at in-the-bag. That's bag with two G's. .com. So in-the-bag.com.
Exactly. So that's what we've got going on. And of course, we will be going through from top to bottom picks wise. We won't be doing any of this 32-1 sort of thing that ESPN likes doing. We will be going from 1 to 32. So tomorrow you will be able to get your Colts and Rams fixes.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. We're not trying to drive ads or anything like that. No. So we're not going to keep the people waiting.
In any case, as I was saying before, I would definitely say, I mean, I know you're a Redskins fan. You guys haven't been that good. I guess you made the playoffs a few years back. I'm a Bills fan. We haven't made the playoffs since, I guess, 2000.
Yeah, not a good look.
So, I mean, how do you feel about the offseason? Are you genuinely excited when it comes around? Are you just disappointed? Do you just want to kind of wash yourself clean of another stinky Redskins season before really gearing up? Or how do you feel when, you know?
I'll be honest with you. By about week 14, I was really intently watching, like, Mac games, black college football, Ivy League football on Versus, like looking for just gems that we potentially might be able to get in the late rounds. Uh-huh. So, you know, I have to say I am a little excited this year. Most of the Snyder era, it was you just dreaded it because you knew they were going to mess it up in some way. But I feel as if now, I mean, of course, Shanahan is saying he's going to turn his attention to the offense. I think, you know, with a 6 pick, we'll just have to see. I mean, if there's a quarterback, if RG3 is there at that point, which I don't really see that happening, I think we should take him. Outside of that, I've said earlier, I feel like we could get Claiborne, the cornerback at LSU. I like his size, especially matching up against Dez Bryant, also a league where there's a lot of just big, tall, number one receivers. You know, so, yeah, I'm excited. I think we can do things. This is a deep draft for offensive line. We need offensive line badly. I think we have to go heavily there. I wouldn't mind if we went offensive guard first round. I think there's some good guards that are out there.
Not at the 6th pick, though.
Well, you know, maybe not at the 6th pick, but I have to say, in a way, I could almost accept it because it sets a tone almost to what you're trying to do to the fans. Like, we've neglected the offensive line for so long. Like, we really are going to make this a priority because obviously you have to have a good offensive line. In the history of Washington, the Hogs, one of the most famous offensive lines of all time. So I think when you're trying to build a good offensive line, it really harkens back to the legacy and the traditions of the team. And so I do feel, you know, with Bruce Allen here, and he understands that maybe perhaps this is the year, not that we're going to be super good next year, but that we'll keep laying fan foundations. And on defense, we're also going to have, you know, not only are we already good, but I think we're going to get Jenkins back, you know, who was hurt, went down early there for the season, and he was looking very good. So I'm feeling good. I have to say I'm feeling good.
Well, I mean, I'm going to assume that they're not going to trade up, and or they might not even draft Griffin, even if he fell to the sixth spot. You know who I see them taking?
Who's that?
Justin Blackmon. That's who I see.
I can see it. They need a receiver.
They don't have any receiver talent.
So we'll see. And I mean, obviously, that, you know, I think Shanahan wants to make a big offensive splash. I mean, he's already pretty much been hinting at that. But the Bills, man, how are you feeling? That's the real question.
I always feel bad because I know they don't know what the hell they're doing.
That's true. you don't have solid front office people.
As you know, I believe we were chatting during the 2010 draft.
Oh, we were.
Where I said something along the lines of, if the Bills pick C.J. Spiller, I might die or shit my pants or something. I don't know. Something like that. And, you know, needless to say, they took C.J. Spiller, and I think I was dead silent for the next 5 minutes.
Yeah, it was not a good – you were not very happy at all, I have to say. That whole draft, you were extremely upset. And I understand where you're coming from. And like I've been telling you for years – obviously, North American Bills are coming. They are trying to drive down
they can
move the team to Toronto, man. North American Bills.
Governor of New York, Cuomo, said he's given part of this $84 million he's given to the Bills to keep them in Buffalo. So there you go.
We'll see. We'll see. We've heard those kind of things before.
In any case, I knew before this season we weren't going to be any good. I was surprised that we ended up starting 5-2. But I still wasn't sold that we would end up making the playoffs or anything, and lo and behold, we end up 6-10, which you know, feels about right.
Yeah, so, you know, you really set the world on fire in the first half of the season. In a way, for the Bills, that's got to be a moral victory. I mean, come on.
Getting any good coverage on ESPN is always a welcome thing, since that comes few and far between. But so I've basically been looking towards this offseason the entire season, just because I knew. Just because I knew, you know, we wouldn't be any good, and we still lack a lot of talent. I don't know if I'm going to get into who I really want. I'm going to wait until, you know, I watch a little bit more of these guys and read some more about these guys. But I'm always for an offensive tackle. And this draft is deep with the top three all projected to go within the first about 12 picks or something. So that would be fine with me. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's always. The draft time for bad teams is always, you know, hope springs eternal.
That's true.
You're
always hoping
you can get that one guy that'll finally end the drought of losing and become a foundation block.
Turn around for you. All I got to say to you, Bagman, is get your Tim Hortons gift cards ready.
They have Tim Hortons in Buffalo, so I don't know what that even means.
Canadian invasion, man.
Okay. In any case, on the theme of hope springing eternal, we've got NCAA football, the NC2A National Signing Day deadline.
Kids putting hats on
February
in the gym.
1st, yes. What do we think all this? What do we think the media coverage for this? I mean, it's kind of – did you watch – first off, let me just ask you, did you watch any of the Under Armour High School All-American game?
No, I refuse to watch high school games on ESPN. I think it's ridiculous that high school players are on national TV. I mean, these are like legitimate kids, and I feel I just don't. It just rubs me the wrong way when I see they have these prep schools playing each other. They have the high school All-American game. You know, they're televising the National Signing Day. I mean, it's all just a little too much for me. You know,
yeah,
I mean 17, 18 year olds.
It is completely ridiculous. I watched. I was flipping through, and I watched about 5 minutes of this Under Armour All-American game, mainly because Jim Kelly's nephew, I believe, was in it. And I was like, oh, Jim Kelly's nephew. I see what he's doing. But, I mean, during this game, they have – the most ridiculous part is during this game, they bring up recruits into the stands with their entire family around sitting on a random couch, and they're like, and Darren Oak was there, and he's like, okay, we know that your top three schools are this, this, and this. Do you want to announce where you're going now?
That's unbelievable.
Who the hell? This is ridiculous.
I mean, the fact they had Darren Oak with it. I'm sorry, man. That's just too – ESPN is over the top. Yeah, it's just too much, man. And I think that, you know, it really just elevates this decision to being much more than it really is.
Yeah, and I mean, especially because – I mean, I understand for the draft, okay?
Right.
Because those guys, they have competed for at least 3 years in football – or at least 2 years, I guess, in football.
Right.
Some of the best competition. Sure, they don't play all the best people all the time. But, you know, you've seen them against good competition.
Right. You know they can play.
Yeah, and they've matured, and you can see kind of where they're going. These guys, they're 18, 17, 18-year-olds, and they're just kids. And, I mean, just because you're a five-star recruit doesn't mean jack, you know? Who the hell
as Charles Barkley says, there's a lot of five-star recruits that when they get to campus can't play dead.
Exactly. So it's just ridiculous. And, I mean, yeah, the coverage of people scheduling their signing days, their signing day press conferences so that, you know, like, they can be a little goofy and creative, sticking other hats and other hats and then pulling the hat off but having the other hat on. And
yeah,
It's really, really kind of sad.
No, it really is. And, I mean, it also just shows the influence of all these outside forces on the players that, you know, the decisions, they're so hyped up. And it really, you know, puts pressure on them to make these decisions so early. February 1st, I feel like it could be a little later, really. But
well, I mean, it almost sets up these highly touted recruits for failure because if they don't, because you're just like, why did this guy get on TV 2 years ago if he was just going to be the third string backup offensive guard, you know?
Yeah, for sure. No, it's true. It's true. And it definitely raises their own expectations and that of other people. So, yeah, I'm not a fan of it. I'm not a fan of how high school sports has really just been took it. I mean, I feel like it was LeBron James when his game started to get televised.
It was.
It really sort of breached this, you know, barrier of high school games not being the kind of thing that were nationally hyped up, but now they are.
Yeah, so that's, I don't know. It's just, the whole thing is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like I've seen, the thing that gets me about this, especially, is I've seen, like, news reports, news stories about, like, when the person's going to say he's going. Not where he thinks he's going to go, but it's like, yeah, he's apparently going to make his commitment on, you know, Sunday, by the end of this
right.
week, or Saturday, and you're just like, come on, this is absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that, but I guess if you're the fan of a particular team, you do probably love it, because then you get to have the positive feeling, I guess, when these highly touted recruits, you can watch them choose your school and with all the hype and the
you get to count the
hoopla.
Stars, my friend. You get to count the stars.
That's the truth.
But, I mean, in the same vein as media overhyping and media ridiculousness.
Okay.
I mean, we clearly didn't have a podcast here until, you know, last week. And we missed, you know, basically the entire college football season. But I feel as though the media, especially ESPN and those sorts of sports media, have become almost too powerful. People are almost, they're too fearful of the media backlash that they will receive on television and in magazines. I'm bringing this up now. I mean, clearly, to me, the whole Joe Paterno situation when it happened. I'm just going to briefly go over this because, you know,
right.
it's been beaten like a dead horse multiple times.
I understand.
Times. But how and when Joe Paterno got fired was an absolute abomination to me. The reason is no one knew anything at the time. There was a lot of hearsay. There was a lot of conjecture. There was like, yeah, you know, maybe this guy did talk to Joe Paterno and we don't know what Joe Paterno really did, but clearly he has to go because he might have been told about this, you know?
Well, at the same time, though, I have to say, to me it was correct. I can't believe it took them so long to fire him. I mean, I think that they knew in 1999 that this guy had said he had inappropriate contact with kids. And after that, They continue to allow him to have private access to an office, to the showers, to all the football facilities. I mean, he was at practice 2 weeks before the whole story blew up. So even if you're not 100% sure, especially even, you know, sort of later into the last decade after the Catholic Church scandal, don't you think that these people who at least knew that there is a suspicion would restrict this guy's access areas with kids?
That's not what I'm talking about at all. I'm not saying Sandusky was innocent.
No, I know you're not saying that. I'm just saying I think Paterno knew enough that for him not to restrict the access with what he knew, to at least take that preliminary step, to me was grounds to be fired. Because to me, that's the obvious thing you do there, just to remove any suspicion.
Well,
I
agree with you, but the fact that they fired him immediately, basically, when the story broke. I mean,
right.
If they knew all this stuff had to have happened. There's no way no one knew about Joe Paterno being told, and then Joe Paterno tells someone else all this nonsense. So if you're going to fire the guy anyway, you fire him. You don't wait. I mean, and you don't react to the media as such, whereas the day the story breaks, all of a sudden it's like, oh, man. You know, I mean, clearly it shows guilt for Penn State and the higher-ups in how they fired Paterno, but I'm saying it just feels, I mean
it could have been handled more smoothly, for sure.
They basically just fired him because they knew that, like, they would be getting a bunch of media backlash.
Oh, definitely. I mean, they were trying to, I mean, clearly what was happening when they fired Paterno is Spanier was trying to save his own job. And obviously after they hadn't fired Paterno, like, immediately, and then they did fire him, you know what I'm saying, after he had already announced he was going to step down at the end of the year, you know, like, that really complicated things for them. I think they should have done it right away, and they didn't do it. But I think obviously Spanier just wanted to say, okay, well, if we fire Paterno, maybe I can save my job if I'm the guy who's seen as cleaning the thing up.
Mm-hmm. In any case, enough Paterno. Really, the media backlash thing to me has kind of reached. I mean, this is pure speculation on my part. We're going into hypothetical/speculation land here, so
no doubt.
Take this with a grain of salt. I have no facts to back this up. Just,
all right. That really inspires confidence in your analysis there, my friend.
Yes, but basically, the reason I'm bringing this up now is because as an Iowa alum.
Okay, Hawkeyes.
Yes, the Iowa Hawkeyes, University of Iowa.
Get it.
Their leading running back, Marcus Coker, has decided to transfer.
Gone.
No one really knows. I mean, basically, the reason is Marcus Coker is transferring because he was suspended for the bowl game. No one really knows why he was suspended, but there's a lot of hearsay. There's a lot of speculation by media pundits and the like. That
one of those violated team rules kind of infractions.
Exactly. He violated the student honor code or something. But there's a lot of speculation that he was suspended for the bowl game due to a sexual assault charge brought up against him on October 28th.
Not good.
However, by the first week of December, the charge was dropped.
Right.
So basically what Coker is thinking here is, you know, why did you suspend me for the bowl game when clearly, you know, the legal system was not going to prosecute me or anything?
Right.
And, I mean, it's a good question if that's really the reason why they suspended him. And
right.
To me, really, the only reason why you would do that, because, I mean, you could have suspended him immediately when you found out. Now, I don't know. Clearly, it doesn't take a month to find something out like that, but you might not know immediately after it happens.
Right.
But or you could have even suspended him once you realized that your season was down the tubes, basically. You weren't going to compete for a Big Ten championship, all that stuff. In any case, the only reason I can think of for suspending him, if it's for this transgression, is because Iowa was worried about all the media backlash that would happen. Because no one knew about this sexual assault thing until after he got suspended and someone started looking into it. But say Iowa had let him play all the games, and
right.
Then ESPN got it on the tip of their tongues that, oh, Marcus Coker was involved in this sexual assault thing. I feel as though they that's the reason why they suspended him for the bowl game, is because they knew eventually it would get out, and they wanted to preempt it by saying, hey, look, we did something about it.
I mean, that's probably true.
If that's the reason why he was suspended. I just feel like the worrying about the media and what they're going to say and them pounding it into everyone's heads about how horrible or how great someone is just has reached such a level that it's just... You have to get like a preemptive approach to these things.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that the 24-hour news cycle is you know, rapid response is the order of the day. And I think that, you know, obviously these networks do have a lot of power. I mean, and they don't often use it for good. I mean, I think the bigger problem to me is actually them, rather than them tearing people down, is them building people up. I mean, the way they built up Paterno, the way they're building up Coach K, I mean, they just set people up for these huge catastrophic falls, you know, that rocked the sports landscape for 1 to 3 weeks and, you know, shocked the whole country. And it's just, you know, none of it really has to happen. And it's like, you know, I love college sports to such a high degree, and I hate to see in that in particular how these coaches get built up to the point where, you know, the mythology of a coach totally outshines the program and the players, you know?
Well, I mean, I feel like, a lot of the sports journalism nowadays is just pure opinion. Anyway,
ESPN is like 90% opinion and like 10% journalism.
Yeah, there's not a lot of journalistic, I don't know if integrity is the right word, but not a lot of journalistic responsibility, I'll say. If they find even a nugget of something that's awry, they will blow it up, you know? They'll just blow it up. Now, of course, there have been huge stories like the Paterno thing, like the Ohio State thing that, you know, deserve to be blown up.
Right.
But a lot of these things, you know, I don't know.
There are a lot of trivial things on ESPN every day that they make a big deal out of that aren't a big deal.
Exactly. So, I mean, I don't know. I just feel as though the media is kind of it's getting a little too much. I feel like there needs to be some more responsibility in the way they're reporting, and they should actually...
There needs to be more actual reporting. I mean, less just, like, endless highlights and news shows, and more, like, you know, the one thing I was thinking during the whole Paterno scandal is, like, where is any sort of, like, educational... like, you know what I'm saying? Like, why are they just endlessly reporting the same information over and over again from State College? Like, why don't they put together some, like, one-hour special on, like, I don't know, abuse in sports? Get Sugar Ray Leonard on there, because, you know, he just had the book come out. You know, like, try to do something that, like, you know, is looking forward a little bit to not only, like, okay, this is the blow-by-blow of what happened hour by hour, you know, from Ed Werder or whatever, and for Tom Rinaldi in front of the courthouse. You know, I just felt that, you know, we need more of that, less of this endless highlights, you know, criticism, opinion show, and more actual informative, you know, long-form reporting.
Yeah. I mean, the reporting really has taken a nosedive lately. It is a lot opinion and a lot of building people up just so they can tear them down, just so they can build them up again sort of stuff. I don't know. I just get sort of tired of it when they find just some little nugget of maybe some infraction, then all of a sudden, you know, it blows up ridiculous. Like, here's another example. I'm not a big Pat Forty fan, as you know. You're a big Pat Forty fan.
I do like Pat Forty.
Yet another Hawkeye story from last year regarding when I think there were about 11 players that were hospitalized due to a really tough workout that they had after the holidays.
Right.
And, I mean, the Pat Forty, like the day after this news story came out, Pat Forty, no reporting at all, just rips into Kirk Ferentz saying how he's like this horrible, he's this human being that says one thing and does another, and, you know, people trust their kids when they give them to Kirk Ferentz, and, you know, clearly he can't be trusted because he wasn't there. And I'm just like, Kirk Ferentz was on a recruiting trip, like, a 4 or 5 hour plane ride away. The story broke in the middle of the night. I mean, it's just these things that they just go after. Once they get a little nugget, they just go after it so hard as if, you know, like, as if President Nixon, you know, the president has you know, right, know, whole water thing. So it's just ridiculous. They need to take a step back, let some actual reporting be done.
Yeah, for sure. I'm with it. Well, the question is, will the new NBC Sports Network, will they try to do more actual reporting, and will that put pressure on ESPN?
I feel like the NBC Sports should be more. Should just be more. They should just be worried about games more than anything.
Well, they've already copied the 30 for 30 by having the Summit Series documentary based on the Canadian Soviet Union Summit Series hockey games. And, you know, but they're going to have all, they have the hockey, they basically own hockey, essentially, and they've got all the MLS games, too. So they've got two niche sports. And they're going to have the Olympics. So I think from that perspective, they've got a chance to do a fair amount. And I mean, you know, they've got NBC.
They've still got Bob Costas. And the tennis and all that kind of stuff, too. So
yeah, no, for sure,
off the beaten track sports are not as popular sports as other ones. But
PBR bull riding, my friend.
Yes.
Can't sleep on that. Can't sleep on PBR.
If you say so. If you say so. In any case,
big in Alberta.
Okay, it's big in Alberta.
I mean, I'm just saying. I'm trying to have a global appeal, son.
Okay. PBR, you gotta love it. I went to the Austin Rodeo.
There you go. There you go.
In any case, it looks like we're running out of time here. So let's go to the Cups of Joe.
Yes.
I'll just start it off. College basketball conference play has started. It's always a big time when conference play starts. Always a bunch of crazy upsets that happen because, you know, all of a sudden Michigan goes to Iowa and gets beaten by 16. You know, Indiana goes to Northwestern or wherever it was and they get beaten. So you just gotta love. I just love the college basketball conference season.
No, for sure. I mean, it really allows teams that have been, you know, kind of on the bubble, mediocre, maybe had a couple big wins, to really emerge and show what they've got. And now that, you know, we've got some of these bigger conferences, their dominant conferences, Big East, ACC, you really get a good sense of who the best teams in the country are, you know, pretty early. I mean, I'm excited to see Virginia with a chance to actually do something in the NCAA tournament. I mean, who would have thought that? But beast mode defensively.
Yeah, they had a good game at Duke.
I was watching that game. Oh, that was a heartbreaker at the end. Oh, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Let me tell you. I mean, I thought that they rushed the first three, and, you know, I think they had a little more time than they thought. They probably could have called a timeout, I think, and tried to get one last shot. So, I don't know. But whatever. You know, they were at Duke. I think
no, they played them tough. That's all that matters.
That's a moral victory, for sure.
Staying on the hardwood here, how bad have the Boston Celtics been?
Horrible. Atrocious. You know, I have to say, you know, I'm not saying that I watched them play the Mavericks last week. I'm not saying that KG got dominated by Dirk Nowitzki, but I felt Dirk looked more athletic. And just the fact that I thought that, to me, was a bad sign for Garnett.
Well, I mean, Celtics, I mean, if I'm the Celtics, I'm kind of thinking about shutting it down this season. If you think about it, they're all old guys. If you run them into the ground, they're going to have absolutely nothing left, whereas, you know, they only have like a quarter left right now, as is. So if I'm the Celtics, I'm thinking about maybe shutting the whole thing down, and then I assume they have their first-round draft pick. I think they do. I think all those trades that happened, you know, they've got their first-round pick. Then all of a sudden, you know, one of the deepest drafts in recent history comes around. Now all of a sudden the Celtics, just a couple years removed from a championship, get a really nice lottery pick, you know, 7, 8, somewhere around there, maybe even a 6. They infuse a little young blood into the
team.
All
right, maybe, but it depends on what you think the big three really have left. But all right, you know, I will grant you that they have a chance to maybe make something happen.
I mean, they can't be starters anymore. You can't count on them to be
very true. Very true.
Okay. Anyway, moving on along. It looks like Prince Fielder, his final choice, his main destination looks to be the Texas Rangers.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about this?
I mean, I think that for him, obviously, the asking price was just too high. I mean, I think the Rangers is a good look for a team to go to. I mean, that's a good team. I mean, obviously, you know, they're contending. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for him to go from one good team to another good team, and for a player like him, a bigger guy, to be in an American League team, you know, where you can play DH and really just get a lot of big hits and get stats. I'm not saying he's going to do that right away, but if he goes to the Rangers, I think that would be big. But you never know. I mean, maybe someone could emerge here at the end.
Playing in the bandbox that is Arlington, Texas there. Also,
yeah, for sure.
Stats.
It'll be curious to see if he gets the money. You know, if he does, then everyone criticizing Scott Boras will have a lot of crow to eat.
Yeah, I mean, the thing to me is, do you think this signing would offset the loss of C.J. Wilson?
I mean, it gives him a lot more offense, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's not in debate, I don't think.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it can offset it, but I think it makes a big difference.
All right, last topic here, the last little refill on your cup of coffee.
That's right.
We've got the NFL helmet coming. There's a new name for
Shoot,
the NFL.
Well, this is what it is. They're trying to sell it to the NFL.
Okay.
The Shoot. Shoot is trying to make a new helmet that they're trying to sell to NFL, college, whatever, and they're calling it the Vengeance helmet.
Okay.
And obviously they're in steep competition with the Riddell to sell these helmets to people. But, you know, with the trend going towards focusing less on headshots, it seems interesting that one of the major helmet manufacturers that will be giving this helmet out probably to youth sports, high school, college, as well as maybe potentially the pros, you know, would be pushing a helmet that essentially is kind of saying, use me as a weapon.
That is a fair point.
But it just makes you wonder, because the helmet manufacturers, you know, they claim to be sort of on the cutting, you know, we really want to do the research to make sure the helmets are safe, but they seem to still want to use, you know, violent head blows as a marketing tactic.
I mean, I'm going to say right now, if it keeps players even, you know, a small percentage safer, they can call it whatever the hell they want, but... Yeah,
I mean, potentially, but helmets can only keep you but so safe.
Yeah, exactly.
And
I
so,
mean,
you know, if you amp up people using the helmet as a weapon, which maybe you could do with a name like that, maybe not. Mm-hmm. You know, it could potentially.
Well, I mean, clearly, you're playing football. You know, you know, it's a lot of big burly guys trying to get them hyped.
True.
You know, it's not going to. You're not going to get hyped about wearing the Shoot
gumdrop helmet. I'm
yeah.
With you.
The Shoot, you know, dome protector or something, you know, some sort of ridiculous thing like that. So.
It's like a Jim Rome type name right there.
Exactly. But I think that's going to do it for this week on the Bag Pod.
That's right. Get us at n-the-bag. That's bag with two G's .com. n-the-bag.com, inthebag.com.
Or you can find us on iTunes if you search those things without the dashes, or if you search the Bag Pod, you should be able to find us as well on iTunes. Like I said earlier in the podcast, we will be coming at you hopefully every Monday, right? Monday/Tuesday, I think. So.
I think that's what it's going to be early in the week. People can hit you as well on Twitter with the In the Bag at Twitter, correct?
It's true, yeah. And you can follow us on Facebook with In the Bag.
That's right, you can get at us.
Page up there,
you can get at us.
Definitely come by and take a look. Hopefully we'll be back with you guys next week. And, yeah, just have a good week.
All right.